Welcome to the Irish Tech News Podcast, where we will bring you some of the most interesting interviews and features from the world of tech. Visit irishtechnews.ie and check out our podcast section to explore all of our previous episodes. You can subscribe to our podcast using whatever your favorite app or service is by visiting anchor.fm/irish-tech-news.
Hi, welcome to the Irish Tech News Podcast. Today I'm talking with Maeve Flahan, co-founder and head of operations at Proptics. How are you, Maeve?
Hi, Ronan. How are you?
Great, thanks. Now, tell us a bit about your background so we know who you are.
Sure, Ronan. So I'm from Kilconnell, just outside Ballinasloe in County Galway. I did my BA in NUIG, and after completing my degree, I joined a graduate programme and was mentored by the late Senator Fergie Quinn. You know, he literally wrote the book on crowning the customer, which remains my go-to guide for customer experience and success today. I also did an MBA during my time there. Yeah. And then I guess the next phase of my career saw me follow the entrepreneurial path. I built and sold two successful restaurants, applying many of the innovative customer satisfaction concepts learned from working with Fergie Quinn. And then I eventually decided to move back closer to home to Westport, where I took on a completely new challenge, which was to build a recruitment function for a global technology services business covering 100 countries. My background in sociology came in very useful here in an effort to try and understand the behaviours and motivations of communities of people, all from diverse backgrounds and interests. And that brings me right up to today, having set up Proptics in late 2018.
So I guess, what drove you to become an entrepreneur besides Fergal Quinn?
Sure. So I guess I've never been afraid of trying new things. So I think I've always had that entrepreneurial spirit. I guess a live example of this today is co-founding Proptics without graduating with a technical degree. Although beneficial, I don't believe it's a necessity to have a career in tech. I think there are lots of very successful women in leadership roles with other relevant qualifications in tech today, whose careers kind of have evolved over time as they interact with different technologies daily and are incredibly competent in their field. But for me personally, though, I think it goes back to working for Fergie Quinn, who really was a driving force for change. You know, he was one of the first retailers to even think about customer panels and really listening to what the customer wanted, but was always mindful of bias when assessing that feedback too. I was one of a team who traveled to the States to learn about new innovations with, you know, US-based retail innovators at the time, assess, you know, the suitability of new innovations and from an Irish context, and saw them implemented on my return. You know, this was a really like incredible experience and one I've never forgotten. You know, he was always, you know, very forward-thinking as well and conscious that female leadership was important.
Yeah.
Given that his customer base was predominantly female, and really tried to push that needle forward all the time by proactively putting women in key leadership positions. You know, he firmly believed that people and balanced relationships were at the heart of everything, as we do at Proptics today.
Well, for me, I'm thinking about my parents live in Sutton, and basically there was the old HQ was there, and I remember you used to go in there, and when you get your steak, you could tell exactly what farm and what cow it came from. That technology was brought in, and right now, everyone's got that technology available, but he basically was the guy who drove that as something new and innovative.
Absolutely. One of the first to, you know, have self-service checkouts. Yeah. So he really was an innovator, but it was all about the experience from beginning to end for him.
Yeah, and I guess for you, basically, because you said earlier that you weren't have a tech background, but I look at every company right now is a tech company. If you go to McDonald's, tech company selling burgers, because you walk in there and you see a touchscreen and you're ordering via that. If you now go to certain restaurants right now, it's all done via contactless. You can order from your phone your food or your menu. So no matter what you do, if you're a restaurant or whatever business you are, you're a tech company selling a product or service.
That's it. Absolutely. And you know, it was working with, you know, many leading global technology brands in my last role. You know, I experienced that shift in focus towards data in the mid-2000s and understood its importance in AI systems in particular. And my question was, okay, I get that good data is essential to building good AI systems, you know, but who's going to evaluate whether or not these AI systems work in real world situations involving, you know, like humans?
Yeah.
This question continues to drive my thinking around how this could be done, you know, in an ethical, secure, but innovative way, which led myself and my co-founder, Paul McBride, to quit our jobs and start Paroptics.
And also you ask, basically, what is good data?
Exactly. And, you know, it's all about, you know, who's working on that data and all of the efforts that are undertaken to evaluate that data and the model output afterwards to ensure that it's relevant to you, real-world user experience.
Yeah, because for me, basically, what is good data to you might be good data to me. And you've got to make sure you can weed out the good and bad data. And maybe if it's bad data to you, can it be reused by somebody else in a safe, ethical way? Which is kind of tough.
Exactly.
Yeah. Because I've seen basically, like, you might say, well, I want to get basically from data, I want to get basically A, B, and C. And then somebody else, then you, but also you're getting D, E, and F. And you're going, well, can we make D, E, and F anonymized and give somebody else to use so they can use it properly and safely?
Exactly.
Yeah. And what does Paroptics actually do?
So we provide feedback on local algorithm performance of online services for global consumer technology brands.
Yeah.
And so today we source and retain teams of local human evaluators and qualifying them to assess and evaluate the relevance of our customer AI-driven services and content. You know, so the crucial element of our USP at Paroptics is our ability to retain, you know, the most relevant people over time. You know, our experience, you know, in quickly and accurately identifying bias in the data and model that powers AI drives us on our mission to help our customers improve the technology experience for humans across communities, cultures, and countries.
So you can say you're a tech person of Mr. Shopper.
Exactly. Yeah. There you go.
Because remember, I'm thinking back when that was going on with Fergal Quinn, he would have placed great faith on that to know what's going on. And I guarantee you're putting that into action, but in a tech sphere.
In a tech-focused way, yes.
Because how else will they know what's going on with the systems and how it's working?
Exactly.
And getting back to basically AI machine learning, how do you get more women to get involved in that workforce?
So, you know, it's a challenge. You know, with only 18% of females currently involved in AI research and less than a quarter of those considered to be AI professionals, I really think, you know, it has to start with education. And I think it's about, you know, it's not purely, you know, through the traditional mediums of teaching, but maybe setting up, you know, like career discovery workshops to discover the variety of roles available for young girls. And I think, you know, the importance of having, you know, more diverse industry role models shouldn't be underestimated either. And mentors who've, you know, the same lived experience as themselves, so they can identify with, you know, what's possible because they've come from the same background and they've done it essentially. And thirdly, it's really about women who have taken career breaks, who may be interested in a career in AI and are offered the opportunity to reskill or upskill through various programs. I know, you know, Women in AI Ireland, they've designed, or Alessandra Sala there has designed a Foundations in AI course for women, you know, who want to return and carve out a career in machine learning or AI for themselves. But essentially, I guess, you know, you have to remember jobs are person-specific and not gender-specific, and now is the time to change perceptions while narrowing that skills gap here.
Well, what thing, for me, a good example would be to think back when man landed on the moon. The people behind that were the mathematicians, they were all late women, and they weren't recognised until recently as being the core foundation of getting man to the moon and man into space. And if you can say, well, behind every man is a great woman. And in NASA, there was lots of great women, but they weren't been recognised, they are now. And with AI machine learning now, you've got the technology of saying, well, you now get a chance to become forefront and part of the revolution.
That's it. Well, we've seen lots of, you know, great women start out with careers in tech, but it's not just about getting them into the AI industry. I think, you know, being a woman in a heavily male-dominated industry presents challenges, and retention is key too.
Yeah.
Also, companies really need to retain those voices and not disregard them because they're small in number. And I think also, you know, women really need to support each other as we try and edge closer towards, you know, gender parity, so that we can really realise, you know, the highest sort of maturity levels of digital enterprises.
Yeah, and to me, the most important thing is that when you talk about a man thinks differently than a woman does. And everything you do something is all from a male perspective. And how many of those customers you're going to get are going to be men in the end or not women? So surely exactly. you got to think on your behalf, what would a woman want? What would she do?
And you know, that's why, you know, women in machine learning are influencing the designs of our systems at Paroptics today and our structures and decision-making capabilities. I guess to ensure that balance, consistency in our approach. And there, you know, there's many forms of bias that we must tackle, but for us, it had to start with gender. And so to help address that, you know, we recently met two female additions to the leadership team, Inji Girgis, who's Egyptian, heading up quality for us. Inji's degrees in arts and engineering, started her data career with Apple, you know, which is why she's so strong on the qualitative and quantitative aspects of machine learning. And then the second most recent hire is Katerina, who heads up e-learning. And Katerina has a double master's in education and psychology, which really makes her a fantastic fit for the role as we invest more in educational tools and infrastructure. But, you know, these ladies are leaders in their respective fields and were, you know, the best qualified candidates to handle these positions. And, you know, the female candidate pipeline is growing, which is great to see. And we plan to encourage that from board level down. So I think four of the last six hires we've made here were female, which has been fantastic to see. And, you know, it makes complete sense back to your earlier point, Ronan, because, you know, the need for AI teams to reflect the population they intend to address. And that, you know, given that half of the world's population is female, having more gender diversity in AI is a matter of common sense.
Yeah, and for me, you said one of your new hires work in Apple. If you work there, then basically you work with the best technology in the world. And to work there, you must be good at your job. So to get that is a coup. To get something like that working for you is a coup. And that's something you should be proud of.
Absolutely. And we're delighted to have Inji on board. Really, really confident lady. So, yes.
Yeah, because I'm thinking about 100 years ago, for example, when women aren't workers as they are now, it was more a male environment. And basically, women were seen, basically, they weren't really catered for as such except what was done in the home. Now, because they're out in the workforce and they're living the life like men, equal status, they should be rightly given the chance to do their own work. And what you do now with AI, given the chance to make sure that they're looked after as well, because times have changed.
Well, this is it. And, you know, as human beings, you know, we're not free of biases. We all have biases based on our backgrounds and, you know, that we've learned along the way. And so, you know, when we're creating software, you know, there is a possibility we'll transfer those biases into training data for algorithms, which may in turn create a discriminatory result, you know, against a particular class of society based on gender or race or ethnicity or, I guess, economic factors. You know, so that's where we need to be careful because, you know, these biases are impacting the decisions that AI systems are making. Yeah. And left unchecked, you know, the potential for misuse of personalized machine learning outputs, for example, relating to, for example, payment profiles or online interactions or even health status is significant. You know, so similarly for gender bias, when you have a male workforce working on these algorithms, defining the rules, although unintentional, you know, it's human nature, you will get, you know, male bias. And if you have a dominant force of women designing something, you know, they'll tend to design it in a way that suits them. So unconsciously, you're adding your biases to the algorithms you are creating. Gender bias is occurring in machine learning. An example, we'll say a practical example of that would be, you know, in the data sets, you know, if there's not enough women contributing, then there'll be, you know, holes in the AI knowledge, and that's why, you know, bias errors happen essentially.
You might get a scenario where, if, for example, you're an insurance company and somebody is doing an online quote, the AI might determine from your address, it's going to determine, oh, that is a rough area. Now, maybe that's changed over the years, and the AI won't know that, because it's not been programmed to check that. And it's come back, and you might say, oh, yes, I live in this area, and you go, oh, yeah, that's a rough area, that's not we're safe. Well, in reality, or it might, for example, decide, oh, this person is 17, and they're going to be a bad driver, a dangerous driver, therefore, we're going to charge them $4,000 for the insurance. Well, in reality, it shouldn't be that. And when you have people that are real life and are more and get involved in this, they suddenly realize the bias that's going on and I can change it because they'll notice that.
Exactly. You know, another important area is, you know, on the whole recruitment side of things. You know, it's important to recognize, you know, any unconscious gender bias in your recruiting processes as well. And that we don't fall into the, you know, the old social norms about who can fill certain roles, such as nurses, engineers, and indeed, I suppose today, more importantly, you know, in leadership positions like CEOs, data scientists, or machine learning scientists.
Yeah.
You know, so more female interviewers on panels, for example, will hopefully help readjust any unconscious bias by hiring more women and minorities, resulting in greater diversity in the field.
Yeah, because it's important to have that, because you don't want to have a panel totally, and when you've been told, for example, by panel, oh, you need to get more women or more of a different ethnicity on board, and then the problem is they go and do the wrong way, and then suddenly get people on that shouldn't be there, rather than just pick them on merit and because they're good for the job.
Exactly. You know, our own recruiting platform at Paroptix, you know, has diversity targets embedded into it as part of, you know, the goals I set for the team to ensure we achieve, you know, representative gender balance, you know, in every one of the countries in which we are onboarding people. So, you know, we specifically target advertising and media, you know, toward women or toward minority groups to ensure we don't have those gaps.
Yeah, I remember last year I did a podcast with your colleague Paul, great guy as well, and he was very enthusiastic about what you guys are doing, and about you as well. Like, he's got a great co-founder. It's good to see that, and it's good to see basically you've got one male, one female in the company, so you've got both sides covered.
That's it, absolutely, and you know we've got a pretty equal distribution in terms of gender balance in the company right now, which is fantastic.
Yeah,
and I hope that, you know, will continue, that we'll get, you know, some more fantastic female candidates in for all of the new roles we plan to have here.
Yeah, and also, why is human element an important part of a successful AI strategy?
Well, you know, much of the discussion on machine learning and artificial intelligence concentrates on, you know, their technical capabilities and how they can help organisations or where they have not worked you know, as intended, but the human aspect of how people engage with this technology merits equal attention. You know, trust is fundamental to the relationships between people, and whether it's between organizations or consumers, or whether it's between technology and users. And without trust, AI will struggle to be accepted. You know, but what if the machine misses something it should have otherwise spotted? And you know, how low is that risk enough to be tolerated? You know, and missing a piece of that information could result in lives being lost. And so building that trust requires careful thought. And so for me, the human element represents one of two important parts in achieving what I call the AI equilibrium. And what I mean here is that, you know, while technology has embedded so much of the game-changing innovations around AI, it is people who assess and help address the relevance, balance, and bias and performance of these systems, you know, which will ensure more widespread acceptance and trust by society in general. And, you know, Paroptix sources, and more importantly, retains the best domain experts in every country, you know, who ensure companies provide a consistent experience with machine learning and AI-driven systems and services on any device in any location.
Yeah.
And, you know, for businesses embarking on the AI journey, it's important for them to bear in mind that, you know, the AI challenge is not just about getting the machine learning models and software that underpin it into production, what it is, you know, about the maintenance, improvement and adaptation of these models once in production that represents an even bigger challenge. And at Proptix, our team, you know, we have a decade and a half of experience in helping some of the largest global technology brands address this AI post-production challenge. And my mission as CEO is to bring this global expertise, experience and insight to businesses and platforms who are AI-first businesses.
And lastly, before we finish the podcast, where do you see AI heading?
So, you know, at Proptix, our tagline is that the future of data is human, and because it is the data that ultimately powers AI systems, you know, it is crucial that the data is validated for real-world user experience everywhere in the world, because you know, you've got different cultures, different countries, and they can all have different definitions or interpretations of what they think of that platform or that service. You know, and a practical example of where it plays an important role is healthcare and financial services. You know, many people are very optimistic today about AI and healthcare. You know, the many possible applications of AI in diagnosing and treating patients, or, you know, helping senior citizens live fuller and healthier lives. And then, you know, with payments, and payments themselves representing, you know, the main point of contact with customers. You know, for example, when customers are paying for, say, you know, recurring utility bills, machine learning can help identify when and where people, you know, might have problems that occur, you know, before they occur.
Yeah.
And a system with interventions designed to promote a more positive and supportive resolution. You know, so these are just some ways machine learning can, you know, help AI and society, can help society through AI. But regardless of the sector, you know, my goal is to try and make machine learning and ultimately AI more helpful, more humble and more human.
And I guess also to make it more sexy. So people exactly. want to work in that area.
Exactly.
It's like, for example, if you think back about 50 or so years ago when you talk about computers, it would be like in a big, huge room. And that was it. And then nowadays it's not. Nowadays you've got more power in a mobile device than you did in the computer in the room size. So you're making it more
accessible.
More attractive and acceptable.
Accessible, yeah.
Yeah.
That's it. Yeah, well, that's exactly.
Great. Yeah, well, that's great for that, Mae. Thanks for a great conversation. Have a great day and enjoy the weekend.
You too, Ronan. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Take care.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Take care. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the latest Irish Tech News podcast. Check back every day for the latest episode. You can follow us on Twitter @Irish_TechNews, on Facebook, facebook.com/Irish Tech News, on LinkedIn, linkedin.com/company/Irish-Tech-News, on Instagram, instagram.com/IrishTechNews.ie, and on TikTok, tiktok.com/@IrishTechNews.